Hey, welcome to another Data Centric podcast. I'm Steve McDowell, Senior Technology Analyst at More Insights and Strategy. My usual co-host, Matt Kimball, is not with us this week. He's off on special assignment. Hey, so this week is IBM TechU, and at IBM TechU, there is just a slew of storage announcements. So we're going to devote today's episode to understanding exactly what those are. And to help us go deeper on there, we're going to bring in a couple of guys from IBM.
So we're here with our old friend Eric Herzog, who is Chief Marketing Officer and VP of Worldwide Storage Channels at IBM. Hi, Eric. How you doing? How are you holding up?
How you doing? It's great to see you again. Haven't done a podcast in a while with you, so we appreciate you taking the time to meet with us today.
We got Eric and also Sam Werner, who is Sam. What do you do at IBM? You're VP of Storage Offering Management. What does that mean?
Well, I think at most companies they call it product management, but I've got responsibility for the end-to-end strategy and portfolio for IBM Storage. So if you want to know, you know, where we think the business is going and where we're making our investments, I'm your guy.
Okay, so you're the one responsible for these quarterly product announcements. IBM, I say this every time I talk to you or write about you, your cadence of product delivery, it has to be the most aggressive in the industry. It seems like every 3 to 4 months, right, you guys are dropping a 60-page analyst deck on us talking about all sorts of announcements. So it's crazy. But you have announcements. So TechU is going on, IBM TechU. This is a huge event, right? You got 500 sessions, 200 speakers. We're talking before I hit record. You're being translated into 16 languages, everything from Bengalese to what was my other favorite here, Tamil. I don't even know what language that is. This is a big event for you guys. Is this where the world shows up to learn about IBM, how IBM thinks about IT architecture?
Well, IBM TechU is targeted at the more technical audience. Mm-hmm. Pre-COVID, pre-pandemic, we used to have three a year. There'd always be a big one in Europe and a big one in North America and then one somewhere else, whether that be in the Middle East or whether it be in Asia. We invite our end user community. We have IBM technologists, so solutions architects, engineering development managers, et cetera. There's hands-on labs. There's standard, you know, presentation stuff. There's even certifications. So for our resellers, they can get certified at TechU. Obviously, with what's going on with the pandemic, this is a virtual edition of it, and it's the 26th to the 29th of October. And we encourage everybody who is an existing client, business partner. And again, there's lots of IBM restaurants. It's all very technical in nature. There's not a lot of marketing hoo-ha. It's really about understanding the technology. And the key thing is really how the end users can use the solutions better. So that's why the solution architect teams from all over the world are there. That's why some of our development guys are there, as well as the management. And we also, by the way, it's a great way for us to get feedback, right? The partners or the end users say, well, you know, if only you did this feature, how about could you change that? So we use that from our perspective, both the offering managers that work for Sam as well as the engineering managers, as a way to get information right at the point of attack from real end users and real business partners on, you know, changes they want to see, solutions they want to get. So it's very, very beneficial, not only for the end users, clearly, but also for us as well to get their point of view.
It's a really fun place to announce products too, because we immediately get to dive in with our technical users, the people who are really using it, and go through what it is we announced in a lot more detail. So we really enjoy that.
So one of the things while we're talking about what end users are doing and the evolution of IT, one of the things that we can't get away from right now are containers. Right, over the past month, we've had VMworld and some other events. And just looking at what IBM has done over the past 2 years, right, with Red Hat and OpenShift, containers, the perspective is containers are hot and have become mainstream. What are you guys seeing when you talk to your customers about the rise of kind of cloud native and container technology?
Well, we think it's very, very important. And one of the things we make sure that we do is support all environments. So as you know, before there was containers, there was virtualization. Before virtualization, there was bare metal. And the nature of our clients being A, very technical, and B, often enterprise into the global Fortune 500. And I mean, when they're tech, yeah, we have some small companies that are exceedingly technical, even though they're small. So what we do is make sure that we support all environments. So for example, very large accounts in the global Fortune 500 that are running containers, but they're still running VMware and Hyper-V, and they still even have certain applications sitting on bare metal. So we make sure that as the world evolves, so whatever will come after containers, if that is Hinkelmeyer, IBM Storage will then support Hinkelmeyer containers, virtualization, and bare metal. So you want to make sure that the customers, whether they big, medium, or small, get what they need. And by the way, for in the bigger accounts, and you know this because you talk to them all the time, obviously, when you do end-user interviews, that it varies sometimes by application workload and use cases. And some applications, even though it might be better on a container or better on virtualization, for whatever reason, they're convinced they need to leave it on bare metal. So you say, we say, well, it would be better on containers, but if you want it that way, no problem, we'll help you. And that's what we continue to do, is make sure that whatever the environment is, we always will support it. And containers is white hot right now in the market space.
It's white hot, but containers also change the way we think about storage and persistence. You know, containers tend to be very, I don't want to say ephemeral, because, you know, it may have started off that way, but now persistence is part and parcel to the workloads that are running. But there's a lot of churn, right, up and down. We're spinning thousands of these things up. The density of the containers are you know, extremely impactful to storage. So it changes the way, I think, that we think about storage and data protection. It's you know, goes beyond just having CSI drivers that interface to my array, right? So when you think about containers and what your customers are seeing, right, how does that impact things like Spectrum Protect Plus and cyber resiliency and you know, things of that sort?
Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of these initiatives, and we're seeing an acceleration of this adoption of containers because of the acceleration of digital transformation, which is largely, I think, the acceleration is being driven by COVID to some extent, right? So we're seeing it actually pick up pace. And so as that's happening, it's usually happening in the business lines. They're the ones making these decisions. And what I find when I talk to storage administrators, data protection administrators, is they're being handed a strategy, which is we're moving this set of applications, these mission critical applications, into a container environment because we want to make it flexible, hybrid multi-cloud deployment. We want to move over to OpEx models in some cases. And so they're being handed this mission, but then being asked to deliver the same SLAs, the same level of security, the same ability to recover. And what they find in a lot of cases is their data protection tools they're using today won't support that. So they're already kind of locked into this new strategy, and now they're trying to figure out how are they going to deliver the same SLAs they used to. And so part of what we're talking about at TechU is changes we're making to our Spectrum Protect and Spectrum Protect Plus platforms to actually integrate deeply into the Kubernetes environment and give you that same level of snapshot capabilities that you would get, say, in a VMware or bare metal environment, which would allow you to have frequent copies that can be instantly mounted for data reuse or for recovery that are application and container aware. So we're working on building out all of those core capabilities you would normally use in your more traditional environments now in these Kubernetes environments or OpenShift environments. So we're very focused on delivering those capabilities. And that's a big part of our announcements here.
You're making some announcements around containers and Spectrum Protect Plus. How are you thinking about container native storage? Is that something that you're contemplating and want to talk about?
Yeah, we're actually taking a step in that direction right now with our Spectrum Scale product, which interestingly, you know, we've been delivering storage for clusters of compute for many, many years with Spectrum Scale. That's what it's designed for being able to provide. In fact, in a Kubernetes environment, you would call it RWX or Rewrite Many. We've been providing that level of capability for clusters for years through Spectrum Scale. And what we're actually doing is containerizing Spectrum Scale now so that you can deploy that within your Kubernetes cluster and provide some of that automated storage capability. We're also making a statement of direction about where we're going for fully container native storage in the future. We also, of course, you know, through Red Hat, have Red Hat OpenShift Container Storage, which is container native storage for OpenShift environments. And we actually deliver that as part of our IBM storage portfolio through something we call storage suite for Cloud Paks, which brings together all of the IBM software-defined storage portfolio along with Red Hat storage in one simple-to-consume model so that you can deploy the different types of storage you need in a Kubernetes environment. So we make it extremely easy and flexible to deploy both container-native storage and things like external object storage through one single licensing model.
So now, Steve, we also have one fully container native application already, our Spectrum Discover product, which we announced probably 18 months ago, which provides metadata indexing and catalog across not only IBM's Spectrum Scale and our Elastic Storage System, IBM Cloud Object Storage, but also supports S3, mm-hmm. It supports EMC Isilon, and also the NetApp products. So that product, which we brought out 18 months ago, now in July, we announced a fully containerized version of that. So not only with the statement of direction that Sam mentioned and what we're doing with our containerative access control module for Spectrum Scale, so that the cluster can actually access an external set, a data lake. If there's a data lake of 500 petabytes at company X, and they have a bunch of applications now in a container configuration, those applications with the Spectrum Scale container native storage access control module can access this vast pool of storage and simply and easily. But Spectrum Discover actually is a fully container native application and was our first shipping product back in July. So you see, we've already been doing it. And in fact, if you go to what we call container ready, mm-hmm. we've had some container solutions persistent, particularly for persistent volumes, as you mentioned, for block, file, and object all the way back into the very beginning of 2017. So IBM storage has been supporting the movement of containers all the way back now for, you know, close to 4 years, right? Our first product, if I remember correctly, Sam, was Spectrum Virtualized. If I remember, that was like January or February of 2017, where we said, if you're going to use containers, you can get persistent volumes for block storage. So we started all the way back then, Steve, and now have gone to our first container native with Spectrum Discover, the statement of direction that Sam just measured, and of course the container native storage access control module, so that a giant Spectrum scale data lake can be accessed by all the apps sitting in a containerized environment.
Excellent. No, you were definitely early and ahead of the game there. But you know, when I think about containers and cloud native, it makes me think about hybrid multi-cloud. And that's something IBM has talked about, you know, since there's been a cloud. What are you announcing this week at TechU around hybrid cloud?
Well, we have some solutions. Obviously, Sam's already mentioned the container-based, container-native statement of direction. But we also are doing some upgrades to our flash system family with some existing technologies. First of all, we use storage class memory as a storage tier. We don't need to use it as a cache. Some of our competitors use storage class memory as a cache to get better performance on latency. But our array controllers and the way we move everything around so efficiently in our flash system, we're already at 70 mics of latency, 30% better than anyone else without using it as a cache. So what we've chosen to do is use storage class memory as a storage module. Fully hot swap comes in the same exact containers that our flash core modules do that go into our flash systems. So what we're doing is expanding the capacity of our storage class memory. So we in storage class memory, we had 4 modules supported, 24 support for the entire array. We had 4, now we're going to 12. And unlike several of our competitors, we can actually mix and match. So a couple of our competitors, if you want storage class memory, you have to fill the whole array. What we can do is mix storage class memory with our NVMe flash core modules or with NVMe SSDs, because we do support those as well, though we don't sell many because the performance and the durability and some of the features such as compression and also encryption with no performance penalty are built into flash core modules. So we mostly sell those, but you actually could make an array that had storage class memory, NVMe flash core modules from us, and NVMe SSDs if you want. And our automated tiering technology, which is AI-centric easy tier, will allow the array to automatically move hot data. In that last example would go to storage class memory. And if you had flash core modules and SSDs, when it's hot, it'll move it to flash. But that's all automated. You set up a source target automatic moves them back and forth. So that we're introducing. We're also adding, we've actually had now for 18 months, fiber channel over NVMe. But as you probably know, at VMworld, actually right before, VMware announced that version 7 is now officially supporting it. So while we've had it for 18 months, now for our customers using VMware, VMware is officially supporting it. They were not officially supporting it, even though we were delivering it already. And we've already had Ansible automation. We announced that back in February. So we're just expanding what we're doing with Ansible. So those are all related to our flash system storage for hybrid cloud. And then obviously, as Sam mentioned, a statement of direction on container data storage, which fits into that same hybrid cloud space.
And VMware support of NVMe over Fabric is timely, right? Because Fiber Channel Gen 7 has come out with some fairly incredible performance characteristics, and it makes kind of an easy entree into NVMe over Fabric for folks with legacy environments. And I know your partner Broadcom, right, is helping out there. So you answered the question I was going to ask around server class memory. So unlike some other solutions, I don't have to isolate the server class memory into its own memory pool and serve that out separately. You're hiding, you're performing some magic there, right, that does the auto-tiering for me. And takes advantage.
Yeah, that's all built in. So essentially, we put it in the same carriers that we put our FlashCore modules in. You can order as many as you want, now up to 12. In the original release of our new flash system products in February, it was only 4. Now it's 12. You can get, 4, 8, 12, whatever you want. And then again, you can mix and match them with our FlashCore modules. And again, that's a big difference. Many of the other guys who do use it for storage versus a cache, those who do use it for storage often make you buy a complete array with storage class memory. We don't do that. It is expensive. It does improve performance about 50 to 60% over a FlashCore module, but it's also about twice as expensive. So it's really for those companies that really need the utmost in performance for whatever the application, and they always have to have it be the fastest. And that's where storage class memory fits in with us. With other vendors, again, they have to use it as a cache, but our flash systems already can do 70 mics of latency without using it as a cache. So we're already faster in latency by 30 to 40%, depending on the vendor.
Yeah, and I look at technologies like this, and you've highlighted a couple of times that this is not for everyone, right? There's very specific workloads that would benefit from this. But that's a 2020 statement, and storage class memory is just going to become more accessible. As Micron rolls out their 3D Crosspoint, and there's some other technologies, right? I think if we look out the horizon, storage class memory becomes a compelling alternative. You guys are getting there early, so it's really good to see.
We make it really easy for our customers because they don't have to worry about that. They can. Mm-hmm. We have AI built into the storage array to make sure they get the value out of it. So they can just add a few of the SCMs and get the highest performance using our AI. It's right. Kind of like the very early days of Flash, right? When people were still using spinning disk and were trying to use Flash to accelerate some workloads. We make it extremely easy for you. Put a couple SCMs in. We'll accelerate the workloads for you. You don't have to think about how to move stuff around and balance it. We have AI built right into the array that will do it for you. So most cost-effective way to take advantage of new technology. And we're always, always on the front of the curve of that innovation and delivering that quickly to our customers. And we've gotten there by creating just one single platform that goes all the way from entry to enterprise and delivers you all those functions. So anytime there's new technology, we can immediately roll it out across the whole family without having to redevelop for everything.
Hey, so I want to jump, and just like a jump cut, right, from kind of cutting edge storage class memory, high in performance, to tape. So the LTO organization announced LTO 9 earlier this month. It's got 18 terabytes raw capacity. They're saying up to 38 terabytes compressed. How important is tape to your cyber protection, cyber resilience strategy? And I think you're one of the largest vendors of LTO in the world, right? How are you thinking about LTO and tape in the enterprise today?
Well, for us, we've had a renaissance in the tape space for a couple reasons. Obviously, the easy one is, of course, incredible capacity, and tape is still the cheapest. So as petabytes become exabytes, and you need to archive and backup and things you might need to do for regulatory and compliance, traded company anywhere in the world, then, you know, tape is great for that, right? And you got to keep it, and you don't need to use this old financial data, but you got to keep it in case you're audited, right? Stuff right. like that. And now the amount of data is exponentially growing. But the other thing that's really helped us a lot has been the incredible cyber risks that have faced the world, both now, obviously, with COVID, it's gotten worse, but it was happening way before COVID. So we've, whether it be large global enterprises, we sell a lot of tape to cloud service providers, big, medium, and small, who then offer, obviously, backup as a service. They do it for capacity, but a lot of our enterprise accounts are using it for cyber resiliency because, obviously, you create a physical air gap, right? We also create logical air gapping because we can snapshot and we have things like our Spectrum virtualized for public cloud, but that's a logical connection. Right now, no malware or ransomware has figured out how to climb that, but they will eventually. When it's a physical air gap and that tape is separated out from your primary storage physically, you can't. So it allows you to create copies that, and you know, you could create a, you know, when it's a known good copy, you bring that back. If you have a malware or ransomware attack, you clean off, of course, through primary storage and of course your servers. And then you can go ahead and do a restore from copies you know that are good because this physical air gap makes known good data sets. And then you recover those known good data sets that are free of malware and ransomware. So between the capacity side, and then clearly the cyber resiliency has really helped our tape business take off. We are, as you said, we are the number one provider of tape in the world by far. And that's, you know, obviously with all the large accounts we deal with, whether it be storage for the mainframe or storage in the non-mainframe space or flash systems, they're so important and they're often public companies, of course, that it's really helped the tape business grow independent of capacity, which has kind of been a checkbox for tape for years and years and years. But cyber resiliency is a new thing that's accelerating tape growth.
Yeah, and that's something I don't know that a lot of IT administrators think about is the importance of that air gap. You look at cloud-centric data protection solutions, and almost to a solution, it's all about backing up my data to an S3 bucket or an object store someplace. But that leaves that data online, right? So you're actually amplifying the attack vector a little bit. And as you said, it's hard to jump that air gap. So I know the large enterprises have been bought into tape for their entire existence, you know, get it, but kind of the mid-sized companies and those others, you know, it's a different way of thinking. So we've touched on your announcements around Spectrum Protect Plus and containers, storage for hybrid cloud. What did we not talk about that you want to bring up that you're announcing this week at TechU? What do we not want to miss?
Well, one of the things that we're announcing, and you talked about hybrid cloud, and you just talked about this idea of creating copies of data and putting it into a bucket on S3. We are expanding Spectrum Protect, which, by the way, today you can back up to all the major clouds. We're now including Google Cloud as part of that, which I think rounds out now all the major clouds, so you can protect your data to the public cloud of your choice. You can also protect the data within the public cloud of your choice. So we provide you the ability to do all that data protection. I would consider, putting copies of your data out in the cloud to some extent a logical air gap, obviously not on the same level of protection that you get with tape. Nothing can beat the true physical air gap. However, we have capabilities in Spectrum Protect like ransomware detection that will alert you when we detect anomalous behavior that could indicate an attack so that you can take action. So we're building a lot of AI into our solutions across the portfolio to help protect our customers depending on their requirements for doing backup.
Excellent. Hey, so before we wrap up completely here, and I always like to end these conversations with this question. As I said at the beginning of our talk, right, IBM moves fast and furious, and I know we're going to see some announcements probably in February or March, right? What's next? What's got your attention right now, beyond what we've talked about today?
I think you're going to see a focus from us consistent with what you're seeing in this announcement. You've heard IBM make some major, major announcements about our future focus around AI and hybrid multi-cloud. Yes. And we're maniacally focused on that and storage as well. So I think you'll see us continue to drive innovation around containers, both data protection and for storage. We know that our customers want to leverage the investments they have in their infrastructure today and move towards modernizations. So we're going to make it really easy to take advantage of that storage and do modern type deployments. And I think you'll see us delivering capabilities that accelerate AI and make it easier and easier to manage the data pipeline. Eric talked about Spectrum Discover. We give you those tools. But you'll see us continue to make our storage faster and easier to manage in these big high-performance scale-out workloads. So there's a lot of exciting stuff coming. You're absolutely right. There's going to be big announcements every quarter.
Oh, yeah, and I'm resisting the urge to ask you about the announcement that just showed up about your new spinoff company. I'm happy to see that the infrastructure piece staying with IBM Prime, because I think that's still a critical set of capabilities. Different discussion. So one of the things you've been very consistent about, when you talk about containers, you always talk about OpenShift. When you look across your customer base, are you seeing good adoption of OpenShift versus Kubernetes or just vanilla Kubernetes?
I do want to make one point. So we obviously love OpenShift for a reason, mm-hmm. Because of obviously Red Hat. But let me say this. First of all, I think we all can agree Kubernetes is the de facto standard for container deployment, and that's where the world is moving in their digital transformation. We in IBM Storage support all Kubernetes environments, and we, IBM, believe very much in being open, right? And that's one of the things we love about Kubernetes is it starts from open source. We see very strong adoption of OCP, OpenShift Container Platform, amongst our customers. Obviously, Red Hat has incredible leadership in delivering commercial open application environments and infrastructure environments to customers. So we obviously focus on OpenShift and helping our customers solve their biggest problems, but we support everything. I don't know if you want to add anything to that, Eric, but...
Yeah, at IBM, we're pretty realistic, right? So we know that customers, particularly the global Fortune, maybe 1,500, often will use multiple solutions, whether that be multiple storage vendors. We make sure, for example, Spectrum Protect can back up anything. Spectrum Virtualize allows us to provide enterprise-class data services, not just on flash systems, but on 500 arrays that aren't even ours. So taking that into really what our mindset is, we love Red Hat OpenShift. As you know, IBM Storage was working with them for years before IBM ever thought about buying them. We were already working closely with the Red Hat team. That said, if someone wants what I would call a generic Kubernetes environment, as Sam pointed out, we work with that too. We did the same thing in the virtualization world. Of course, VMware was the biggest, but we made sure that we worked with Hyper-V from Microsoft, that we worked with KVM, that we worked with OVM from Oracle, even though Oracle barely sold it. We made sure that all those virtualized environments we worked with. So in this case, in the container space, we're going to do the same darn thing. And we will work with the stuff from VMware with Tanzu, right? It's Kubernetes based. So we work with Red Hat, and we, of course, push that the most. But if someone's going to use Tanzu, the VMware stuff, we'll work fine with that. And if someone's going to, kind of roll their own, right, with Kubernetes and not use Red Hat and not use VMware or any other major software company that'll enter for sake of argument, then so what? We'll support that too. And we really have really built that into our storage DNA, starting with things as simple as backup. The fact that we could back up everybody's array, everyone's server storage, set us up that, okay, when we do software, it better not work only with IBM stuff. Right. So we've gone out of our way that we work with everything, and the container space is no exception to that.
Yeah, and that seems to be the theme here. So busy week at IBM TechU, so I'll let you guys get to it. But thank you very much for spending the time and walking us through what you're going to announce.
Thank you.
Great, thank you very much.